Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, February 14th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this, go to Apple Podcasts, give it a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it'll lead me closer and closer to world domination, not an evil one, but a benevolent one, that where most people are happy and I get to date a really hot brown skin actress or singer songwriter. This is episode 486. There's no guest. It's just me sitting here at my desk in my bedroom with my Loom Cube light going. And we're going to do some podcasting. I want to talk about some movies, some music, stuff that's going on. I am not post-omelet. I am post-honey bunches of oats and some cantaloupes. I don't even know if cantaloupes are in season. I don't think they are. It's usually a spring-summer thing. And I was at the market a couple days ago, and I just saw it. It cut up cantaloupe, and it looked good. And It was pretty good. The first couple chunks that I had were like, I was like, oh God, this was a bad decision. But then, you know, it tasted, eventually started tasting like cantaloupe, and I was pleased. Patreon subscribers, I do have an omelet fail that I need to post, so you will get that. I know you're waiting with bated breath and hook to see my omelet fail. I gotta say, though, I was in Marshall's on Thursday after work, and I hadn't been to Marshall's in ages, and the Firestarter crew was talking about it so much, and I said, I gotta go to Marshall's. I needed some washcloths, and you know, when you go, I've done grocery store shopping in the pandemic, but not any real shopping. Like, I think I've only been to Target a few times. The Target that there's two Targets near me. There's like two Targets within a 5-mile radius, and they're both shit shows. It's just crazy in there. So I very seldom go in there. And I went to Walmart, I think late December, early January. And it's just too many people, and it's just a madhouse. Where am I going with this? So I haven't done any regular shopping, you know, like, oh, I need to get some kitchen stuff or some, you know, shit like that. Most of the stuff it will be like cleaning supplies. But I went into Marshall's on Thursday. I was like, I'm just, you know what? I'm just going to get some washcloths and maybe some candles, because I'm started to get into candles late last year. And I got some washcloths. And then I just started like moseying over to the candle section. And then on my way to the candle section, I was in housewares, and I was looking at these pans. I was looking at the frying pans and skillets and stuff. And I was like, you know, I'm tempted. I was like, I do need one. But I was just like, you know what? I need a new saucepan more. So I just got a saucepan, and it was like $17, and I haven't used it yet, but it's definitely better than the one I had. My parents gave me a set of pots and pans when I moved into my first apartment, which was like 2003. So that was a long time ago. And this handle on the saucepan that they gave me, it was just old. And it still works, but it was just old and like hanging on by a thread. And so I just bought one to replace that. And then the candle section, it's insane. Like I ended up getting two, and they smell really good. I was watching a movie last night, and I'll talk about that a little later. Finally got to see Minari. And I burned a candle, and it was smelling good. Birthday cake scented. Really good. really good smells there. But you can get, I spent, went in there just expecting to spend maybe $20, ended up getting, going closer to 50, spent like $46. The saucepan was what did it. It was like 17. And then I got those candles. And then I saw some other stuff in there. So I didn't realize, every time I've gone into Marshall's, it's been for mainly washcloths and towels. That's the main reason I would go into a Marshall's. And then I got a wallet there once. And I've got an attaché case too, like a little travel bag. My dad would calls it an attaché case, but it's just a shaving bag. What else? Yeah, so they have a lot of stuff, and I didn't even get any gloves. I was gonna look at gloves. I was gonna look at the soaps. Didn't really see the women in Marshall's were blocking the soap section, so I didn't really get to check that out. But I'm more of a Dr. Bronner's soap guy. I did this web series like maybe 5 years ago, and it was like mainly a black cast, and we were talking about skincare products, and they brought up Dr. Bronner's. I was like, oh, I've never had that. And they showed me. I was like, oh, I've seen that in a store. And ever since then, like I've been loving it. Like I went in one time. I think I might have told you guys this to get blood work late last year, and the nurse was like, "Oh my God, you smell good!" And she's like, "What is that?" I was just like, "Soap." It was just soap, man. So yeah, I'm a Dr. Bronner's guy, so I think I'm good in the soap section. But yeah, I definitely want to check. I think I did buy some Dr. Bronner's from a Marshall's once before, like a Marshall's or a TJ Maxx once before. But so much for that. I balled out of control at Marshall's. Could have spent more. I got to talk about it, guys. I got to talk about it. The Super Bowl. I was upset. I got so upset that I cut it off a few minutes into the fourth quarter. Gallant effort by Patrick Mahomes. They just had his number. Man, that defense, that Todd Bowles coached defense, had his number. That's the kind of black on black crime that I can accept, I guess. That I have to accept. They just had his number the whole night, and he couldn't do anything. But my God, it almost, and Bomani Jones kind of touched on this on his podcast, where I left that game having even more respect for Patrick Mahomes, just the way that he played, the way that he avoided the rush. He only got sacked 3 times, as much pressure as he was getting. I love that kid, man. I hope he continues to play well and do his thing. And he's a Hall of Famer in my book, and I hope he gets at least one or two more before he's done. Tom Brady, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game, is undeniable. He's undeniable, but I just don't like the way that he gets a pass on his social shit, like his that MAGA hat and his child and his outside kid. And I'm sure and him and Bridget Moynihan, they seem to have a good relationship, but it's not like, it ain't like Tom Brady's like, that's kind of like America anyway, but it's just funny how people bring that shit up. His outside kid, and like he seems to have a good relationship with Bridget Moynihan, so that's just me being a dick. But yeah, man, I just don't like how it's how the media just gives him a pass on stuff, and other players like LeBron, they don't appreciate his greatness while he's doing it. I just don't know. It's just collectively, it's annoying to me that these that black athletes don't get that same love, like a Serena Williams, who has been doing this killing for like 20 plus years and still at the top of her game. they're just not celebrated in the same way. That's all. I just want the equality. I could give a shit. My only thing against Tom Brady, well, the MAGA hat and him getting a pass on that, but like one time they did a story on him, Tom Brady, and he was like, he was in this interview and he was crying. He was like, yeah, I thought if I didn't make it, I would have to work in insurance. I was like, fuck you. I work in insurance, you dick. But no, nah, I don't really have no real problem with him. It's just to how he's, it's more of the media than him. But I really don't give a shit. And, but I do, which is the media is the main reason why I'm obsessed with black quarterbacks, because of the way that they're portrayed. And it's just not the same. It's just not equal. But that's the NFL for you. Yeah, those two passes that Mahomes, like, just, I mean, that's like playground shit. I mean, we used to have this kid, two guys at elementary school, the two elementary schools that I went to. I'll just say their first name. This kid named Al, he was like a year older than us, and we'd play in the middle of the street. I probably told this story before, or something similar to this. Like, we'd be in the school was off Pennsylvania Avenue, St. Francis Xavier, and we'd have cones up when we would play football in the middle of the street. It wasn't really like the block would be blocked off with cones so cars wouldn't speed through while we were playing and stuff like that, and we'd have cones up. And we'd be playing. It was this kid named Al. We'd throw the Nerf football around, and you couldn't catch him. He could juke the shit out of everybody. And if he was just the, I don't know, he was amazing, amazing athlete, ended up playing pro ball overseas, pro basketball overseas. He was a kid that could play really well, hard to tackle, and he could throw the ball really far. And then when I transferred to another school in seventh grade, it was another kid that named Marcus, and he used to have he loved Randall Cunningham. He was an Eagles fan, and he was a big Randall Cunningham fan, and he had an Eagles starter coat, and he could run really fast, and he could juke and everything, and he could throw, and so he was always fun to play with. But that's what it reminded me of, like, it legit, like, schoolyard play, and he's just like fearless. So I really love Mahomes, man. They just couldn't get it done. He didn't have any answer. And you know, the Byron Leftwich, black quarterback, calling the plays for Tom Brady. He's been doing it all year. So congrats to Bruce Arians for being forward thinking, surrounding himself with a great and knowledgeable staff. Kudos to him, man. So it, you know, it is what it is. Halftime show, The Weeknd. I thought he was good, man. I thought it was a good show. Looked like it was fun. I don't really know his music that well. It just came on the cusp of, like, his music just came when I was just like getting old. I think I might have been like, he's the age that I am. Let me see. How old is this guy, The Weeknd? Let's look him up. The Weeknd. If he's like, I feel like he's early 30s. He just turned. He'll be 31 in a couple days. So on the 16th. So I was his age when his first shit, I think, came out. And I was like, okay, this guy is cool. I know. I remember his mixtapes coming out and everything like that. But I was just like, okay. Like, he's got talent, and he's doing some shit. But I just didn't. I just don't know his stuff that well. I think he had to have, yeah, let's see, I'm on his wiki, just checking out his discography. And you know that I mean it. You know that if I say he's good, then he's good, because he dated Selena Gomez, and it would be easy for me to hate on his ass. House of Balloons was the first thing that I remember coming out. And I just remember, like, people were making cocaine jokes about him and stuff. The shit where he was in that little maze trying to get out. This is me trying to get, those fucking memes and shit. People wore that shit out. Yeah, but I thought he put on a good show. I'm old, and I don't know all of his songs. I know that I Can't Feel My Face record as a cool song, but like, I kind of like Alessia Cara's cover. I would listen to that more than I'd have his version. Not because Alessia Cara, she can do almost anybody's cover and sound better than the original artist. She's like that good. But I don't know, I'm just a little, yeah, fuck it. You know, he's a talented dude, whatever. He did a good job. People were just trying, it's easy. People always go online to try to shit on stuff that they never have the talent to do themselves, or the courage, even if they did possess some kind of natural talent, they don't have the courage to step out like that and actually do something. You know, it's like that Tenacious D interlude. You create something. That's most of the fucking internet. But overall, great performance, man. He was good. Some people were saying like his sound wasn't good. Like you couldn't really hear him that well, but it was fine. It's fine. I got two requests recently. One, some guy from the, I'm not going to say the person or the name or really try to go really shit on the thing too hard or mention, you know, so you can look it up and try to trash the person. But this person from overseas messaged me about doing my podcast. And what the interesting thing about it was, this person had way more followers than me, way more of a YouTube presence than me, and wanted to do this podcast, this tiny boutique podcast, which was, you know, my show. And I went to the YouTube page, and I was just kind of seeing what the types of people that he had on here. And I'm looking at 173,000 views, 262,000 views, 220,000 subscribers. And I'm looking, when they have people of color, specifically black people, I'm looking at the titles of the videos and I'm seeing The Problem with Black Lives Matter. The BLM agenda is communist. We are in a moral panic. Let's see, we had another one that I saw that was just like, but you get the picture. It's just really, no race has a monopoly on oppression. Anti-racism training doesn't work. And I was looking at these titles, and I looked at one of the videos. It was a black guy who was famous on social media and had a lot of followers. And then I said, that guy looks familiar. And I looked him up, and with a person who made a heel turn within the last couple years. And I said, he was on that person's show. And yeah, I'm not fucking with this podcast or this show. I was like, it's not, we just don't do the same thing. And I said, you know, it's not going to be a good fit. I don't think I'll make a good fit to like cross pollinate our audiences. It's just not going to work. And that was it. And he didn't write back, but it's just like using black people to shit on other black people. And just to say that you're contrarian or different. It's just like bullshit to me. It's like, I'm not doing that. I'll just keep my several hundred listeners and do what I do. And do it in my own space, my own safe space. And it's like, you know, I don't want to like, it just had me thinking like, you know, the people that I surround myself with, I try to surround myself with people that are smart, that are smarter than me, that I can learn from, they can learn from me. That whole iron sharpens iron, steel sharpens steel type thing. I think I think it's necessary. And I don't think I'm in a bubble either. I think it's more of like, these people around me challenge me to be better, challenge me to think more critically about things that I already think critically about. and inspire me to do better and to be a better person. So I don't need anybody to go back and forth with on some things. Like I'll have, you know, I like things that I think that are tenets of decency of, you know, when it comes to politics and things like that. Like you've heard me a bunch of times on this show talking about like being about having empathy towards people and voting for the people that are gonna do the most good for you and your community. That's why I say vote for Joe. You know, all of this stuff. Vote for. Was I doing? Obama was in his second term by the time this podcast started. But like voting for the right people in your local, you know, state, local, and state government. You know, so and it just kind of became. So this podcast was up and running in Obama's second term, but I did tell you to vote for Hillary. And I think most people that listen to this show, I would assume that are, when I'm talking, I'm essentially speaking to the choir. I mean, they're probably haters. They're probably haters listening to this, but I don't know. But it just kind of, that just solidified, like I don't need anybody else in that regard to try to get followers and move up the ladder. Do I want to get a lot of followers? Yeah, but not that way. I'm going to try my damnedest to not do it. All of that attention isn't good attention. Thursday I was in the office at work and I got a call from a comedy club manager, and I was like, oh shit. And she left a voicemail and I called her up and she was like, hey, do you still do comedy? And I was like, I still do it, but I haven't been vaccinated yet. And she's like, yeah, you got a show. I want you to, if you want to work, you can come on down. And I was like, you know what? I appreciate you calling, but I just don't feel safe because I'm not vaccinated yet. But I said, I appreciate you calling and thank you for thinking of me. But that was a couple hundred bucks that I didn't have, but I turned it down. I was like, I would rather just err on the side of safety than to do a show. And then like, and then one, err on the side of safety. And then two, not bomb for 3 nights doing shows. So I'm hoping that things get better and I can get vaccinated, but all the people that are more essential than I am to get it so as soon as they can, so I can be in the number of the people that get that shit. But it was very tempting, but I knew off the rip that I was just like, no, because a lot of people, like, you're like, these people are doing these fucking shows and nobody's really asking them. I got asked to do like some shows like on Zoom, and I don't think I ever got any requests to do anything outside because I wasn't really in that loop of really doing any shows like that. But yeah, because I'd mentioned it before in the show talking about how, yeah, it's easy when you're not being asked to do shows and try to act all high and mighty. And then when somebody calls you, it's like, hey, Chris, can you come down and do it? Oh, I don't know. You know, so I was the temptation was there. And I held it back. And, you know, but yeah, it was very tempting to get that money and to get on stage and tell some jokes. Cause I was thinking like, cause as soon as you, sometimes like you get, cause I haven't done stand up in almost, the last time I did stand up was on February 15th. And I keep telling people that it was in Weirtown, New Jersey, this little club in this, it's a bar restaurant. And they had this really dope back room where they had, where they had, you know, where we had the show. And I, before that, I had done a week of shows at the Borgata. So it's coming up on a year since I've done stand up. And it's very fucking tempting to do it. And I was thinking like, oh, what would I talk about? I know I wouldn't, I would do some, maybe a couple jokes that I would normally do, but I would be like thinking about talking about some shit, you know? So that kind of, that was kind of like, it was very tempting to do that, but hopefully the, when things get better, I can, I'll go back and she won't be like, fuck you, you pussy. You didn't come down when I asked you. But I don't think she's like that. She's actually a sweetheart. One of the nice people in this biz, and was willing to pay me. Like, I think comics should get paid. You know, I think, you know, all this. Okay, so let's just stay on stand up. Dave Chappelle put out a special. He calls it a special because this last special he did called Redemption Song. And he was talking about how he had gotten COVID and how people were kind of happy to see him stumble, happy to see the hero stumble a bit. And I think that's true. And he's got a deal back with Comedy Central. It seems like they made things right and they settled it. And he's got millions of dollars and the show's back on Netflix and people are happy. And he seems to be happy. And here you have the dissent from Twitter. I will preface this thing by saying what I'm going to say by saying that I don't fuck with his views on like the trans community and all that stuff and the gay stuff. I disagree with him on that. Do I understand where he's coming from to a certain degree? Yes, I do, but I don't agree with that 100% update your software in that regard, Dave. But having said that, one of the greatest comedians to ever pick up a microphone, if not the greatest, arguably one of the greatest to ever do it. And I said this, like I said, a couple months ago when I was talking about it on the episode, I think it's called Unscathed. And that was an episode where I was angry. And a lot of people, Randolph Terrence included, said, I love Angry Chris. And I was getting texts from yo, that shit what you talking about? Yo, that shit. I was getting texts from my comedian buddies telling me, man, I appreciate that. But I'm not going to force the anger just to get numbers up or just to get likes and all that stuff. But I will say he's ascended to this level of a griot. And he's the type of person that when he speaks, people listen. And he's earned it through the sweat equity of being funny for over 30 years now. If you know, for a very long time, all of my adult life, at least, and before that. So people will pay to hear him talk. And I'm seeing people say, oh, you know, people are paying hundreds of dollars for tickets and you're doing, and they're complaining. It's like a lot of this is just jealousy. They're jealous of Dave for his money and for his talent. And they want to be where he is. And you can say it's not funny, but part of me feels like I was thinking about this when that 846 special came out. Part of me feels like we just got a portion of what that night was. And I think in the future, he's probably going to put out something on Netflix with what he did this past spring and summer with those shows in Ohio and Yellow Springs. And it's going to be a comedy show and have all the famous comedians. And it's probably going to be dope. There were yuck yucks before that serious shit. I'd like to think that there were. There were jokes and he was telling his jokes, but people just want to focus on him not being funny. It's like Dave can do it. I don't think we've ever seen this before. I'm going to go on the record and say, I don't think it's hard to kind of gauge because we've never seen a comedian ascend to this level and talk about the things that he wants to talk about. because we kind of, you know, after he was gone for like 12 years, but he was still doing stand up. He would pop in and do stand up. He just wasn't doing television. But he was still working on his craft. He was still working in the art form, you know. So he just was out of the limelight. But then, you know, he gives us these specials. Let me, I gotta look this up because I'm not 100% sure. Because it was like 20, it was just a barrage of all these specials that he kind of had in the can and then he put them out. But I just want to make sure, like, the year that they came out. I'm on the wiki. Do they have the specials? So, 2017. We've got the eight, because so prior to that, we had Killing Them Softly. We had For What It's Worth. And then we had that half hour special that he had on HBO. We had some stuff, but the main ones were Killing Them Softly and For What It's Worth. So in 2017, we get The Age of Spin live at the Hollywood Palladium. We get Deep in the Heart of Texas live at the Austin City Limits. We get Equanimity. We get The Bird Revelation. 2019, we get Sticks and Stones. So you got to say, so that's like within, over the course of 2 years, we get 1, 2, 3, 4 specials. Most comedians don't, you know, they don't put out, they don't, that output, a lot of people don't have that type of output. Louis was doing them pretty regularly. But we got Dave doing this. So you've got, so prior to that, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You got 6 specials. You got 6 hours. So then in 2020, we get these 3 pieces. We get 846, Unforgiven, and Redemption Song. I don't think they have to be, it's what he wanted to put out. And if you want funny, if you want laugh out loud funny Dave, go back to those other specials. This is something different. And you can, I mean, you can choose to not like them, but I'll be damned as a black man if I'm gonna just like throw these 3 specials in the bushes. I'm not. For a black man saying what he wants to say and how he wants to say it, putting it out on the platforms that he wants to put it out on so people can consume them. I'm not throwing those in the bushes. If I want to hear his yuck yucks, I got plenty of hours to look at and really enjoy and appreciate. I did the Nerd Off yesterday with Rod and Karen. They're one of their shows under their behind their paywall. And it was the first time that I did it. And one of the listeners asked a question about, oh man, I forget what it was about. Forgive me. But I brought up revisionist history and how people review things like when stuff that came out 15 or 20 years ago and they point stuff out. And I was talking about it and I look at it like, okay, I can see where you're okay. X, Y, and Z, like if a movie like Garden State, there's been like, you've heard me talk about this before. I think I even did some stand up about it at one point, but it was just like, you go back and you kind of shit on something that was really popular. And Garden State, I liked that movie. I thought it was a good movie. Yes, it gave us like the manic, I'm going to get back to Dave, and it gave us like the manic pixie dream girl and like the cool music and stuff like that. And these guys writing these quote unquote perfect, but weird and quirky girls and stuff, all that jazz. But I looked at that movie and I said to myself, if I was Zach Braff, if I was like the black version of that, if I was like 25, 20, under 30 years old, how old was Zach Braff when he made Garden State? See, I'm going down a rabbit hole. This is why. Okay, Garden State. Shit. come on, Google. Garden State movie. This was 2004. How old was Zach Braff? Came out in July 2004. Zach Braff is, he is 45. So in 2004, I was 24. He would have been about 29. So this dude's almost late 20s. And he's in a popular sitcom, and he makes his movie, his first movie. And he gets a pretty girl to be his lead, Natalie Portman. And he puts like good actors in the movie. And he does a killer soundtrack, puts the music that he likes. I would be trying to do the same shit. I would be trying to do the same shit. And part of it is, and what I was like complaining about with Malcolm and Marie, a lot of the people that are shitting on it, the same thing I said about The Weeknd, they want to be doing it. They want to do that. And it's jealousy. A lot of it's jealousy too. And I that's part of it. You could say like it's a lot of other things. Like, oh, you could say, oh, it's just bad, or I didn't like it. You can choose to not like something, but I'll be damned if there's not a little bit of jealousy in it. Some of y'all want to be Malcolm. Some of y'all want to be Marie. And some of y'all want to be Dave. And I think it's okay to admit that. Like, there's part of me that wants to be talking my shit like Dave is talking his shit, and actually have people listen. Listen to what I'm saying. But I can't, for all of a person's flaws and faults, I think, and I have them too, but I think that the performing arts oftentimes allows you to transcend your faults and put something beautiful out that inspires somebody, that makes somebody change the way that they felt about something, change it to a positive, you know, may have been thinking a negative thing, change them to think about things positively, more positive. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I'm like a big proponent of the arts. And I think that's why it's been my calling, and it's been something that I've been passionate about, because that's the way that I feel like I fit in the world. And I think it's made me a flawed person than I am. I think it's made me a better person. The one that you get on this thing every week. So it's just it. And that's why it rubs me the wrong way when people on the internet, and they just seem to do it, and they seem to come to the internet for negative stuff. But when you try to get at a guy that's like really put in the work, that's really laid down, put out some good art, to just shit on him for like, I don't know, what is this? What are these things? 8:46 was what, 20 minutes or so? Let me see how long these fuckers are. 27 minutes. So 8:46, 27 minutes. Unforgiven, maybe 16. Redemption Song was like 10, 7 or 8, 7 minutes if you take out the little montage. So we're talking a little over an hour of output that he released over the course of a year. And you're just really like trying to shit on that and buffer your arguments. Cause he was talking about, I was talking to a friend about it, and it felt like he was talking to somebody specifically, almost the same person that I was talking about on my podcast release called Unscathed. It almost seemed like he heard that shit. And it's just so funny to me that it's the thinly veiled racism and the hypocrisy where you tried to do the same thing and it didn't work out the same way for you that it did for him. And so there's a little bit of a jealousy there too. I don't know, man. It's fascinating to be in the moment, experience this thing, you get something out of it, and just be like, okay, all right. Because a lot of times I think, you know, we use these celebrities as avatars, as our avatars, you know, like we're like, I see this greatness in him, and I want to apply that to my life. And I've done that too coming up. And I think it's just this weird iconography that we have for a celebrity as a country that we just tend to have. And I think too much. And I participate. Like, I talk about it. And I'm partly a participant in that, but not to the excess. It's just like, oh, you kind of root for these people because you want to get there, and you see these people, and you want to get to a certain level. And you say, well, if he can do it, I can do it. It's not like, if this motherfucker can do it, he's not that good, but then I can do it. I just think it's inspiring to watch. It's really, I just think it's cool. But somebody's always going to have something negative to say when you do something like that. I just think it's, you know what it is? I just think it's reductive to when you have a man that's got a career of a career that spans over 30 years, he's put in the work and done, like, he's succeeded and failed. I mean, he used to be called Pilot Boy because he would get all these pilots that wouldn't work. And then he finally had something hit within the Chappelle show, and it propelled him to, like, this astronomical level. And that simmered down, and then he just came back with this brilliant stand-up, and that people seem to like. And, you know, the gay and trans stuff aside, it's fucking great, man. You can just fast forward over those parts and take what you appreciate. I mean, that's kind of what we do now, especially with music. I'll just make this playlist. I don't like that song. I like this one. I'll make a playlist of all the shit that I like and then enjoy myself. I'll just be, as a black man, I'll be damned if I'm throwing those in the bushes. That's easy to just, it's reductive to say it's not funny. It's just because you don't like them. And you don't have to. You don't have to. And then the people that don't like him seem to be tweeting about him the most. Funny how that is, huh? Well, so it goes. I mean, that's my thoughts on Dave. I'm glad that he spoke up. Spoke out on it, and I'm glad that it worked out for him, because somewhere down the line, you're in a similar situation. It might work out for you because of what he did. How about that? Do people ever think about that shit? I don't know if they do. Now it seems like people are moving to Austin, and that's supposed to be where comedy is coming back. I'm not going to Austin. It would be nice to visit, get some barbecue, and when things are better, to rock a stage. Of course, I'd love to do that. But I don't think it's over in New York. I think when stuff comes back in New York, it's going to be good. It's going to be strong. Still the comedy mecca. I love the comic that it made me. And I'm God willing, when the time comes for it to come back in the right way, I'm there. I'm going to be there and be really ready to work and ready to put something out, because there's more stuff that I want to say. And I think I'm here for a reason. I hope I can outlast this stuff, and I hope my carnal desires, my alien lizard brain desires can keep me here long enough to do more of the things that I want to do. And I think that's all you can hope for. So I had TPS reports this week, work this week. There was, I think, I'm not going to be too cocky about it, but I think we came came to a resolution about something in the TPS report world that I had we found a solution to something that I was really concerned about for quite some time, that the person in that had the answers for revealed to me, and that it basically, there's a thing that helps me do my job better that I was made privy to, and I hope that it's gonna help, and it seems like it is gonna help, so I'm happy about that. That happened on Thursday, and I was like, oh, it's a big weight off my shoulders, and now I can proceed to on the grind to grind harder and to know, have a better solution to things, if that makes any sense. I forgot about this Seth Simons article that came out. Let me get to that. It's basically this piece that this reporter, Seth Simons, had about Nazis in the stand-up world. And a lot of people were pissed about that. And and it's kind of stuff that it was in the New Republic. And I'm trying to, let's see. Okay, the comedy industry has a big alt-right problem. And it was from, he wrote this in the New Republic. And if you can get to it, it's in the New Republic. Seth Simons, an interesting piece. And I put it in my group chats and on text, and we were talking about it and stuff. But the thing that, this is something that black comics and people of color, shit, I'm going to speak as a black comic. This is something that black comics have talked about for years. And it's stuff that's been around ever since I started and before that. And you see these, you hear me talk about these comedians that make these heel turns. And once they get to a point where they either hit a ceiling and they can't seem to get to the next rung of the game, of the show, of the hierarchy, they make this heel turn that they go to, you know, your compound media, and they talk to Nazi sympathizers, and they talk to these, they have the Proud Boys on their shows, and they get to this level where they're like, you know, talking shit about women and people of color and all this stuff. And then their career just seems to just take off. And it's much like this Morgan Whalen kid who got caught saying nigger, and his album sales went up, and then they had to get B.B. Winans to fucking talk to him. I don't know how that happens, but how they just called B.B. He's dude's minding his business, you know, and he said, go talk to this racist motherfucker. It's always us that have to clean up shit. And there were some comics that got mad because there were some people that got named for doing one-offs on people's podcasts. And they were mad. So how come I got in it? But it's like, people don't realize, these white comics don't realize that racism. Well, no, it's just, I've said this before on people's shows. I've said it on here. I've said it on Three Guys On. Probably said it on the Black Guy Who Tips. I know I've said it before. But this racism and this white supremacy is not a deal breaker for these white comics. They'll say like, oh, well, he's a good guy. Yeah, to you. But this dude's views are not good. It's bullshit. So when they get caught up in this stuff, they feel like they're attacked. And then there are people that are just, well, if you can't say what you want, like you can say, you in America, you have your free speech, like the Gina Carano thing. Like you can say whatever the fuck you want. But if you do, these private organizations can say, oh, I don't want you involved in what we're doing at this company. I don't want you involved with Disney or The Mandalorian. So you need to get the fuck out, because we don't take this hate speech, or we don't like this kind of talk. You know, like, and I think that there's this these people have to look at themselves, man. Like this whole pandemic is really forcing people to look at themselves, and you try to see some of the things that you don't like about you. Some people don't want to do that, but it's fascinating to me that as an artist, and it's fucking elitist and corny to say it, but as an artist, I'd like to think, and as a comedian, I feel like you're constantly forcing yourself to look internally and try to update that shit. It's, you know, it's just, I think it's what you do. And I feel like it's a constant process of rewiring, rethinking, recalibrating yourself. And it's hard. So some people don't want to do the work. And they just stay in this stasis where you're just comfortable, and you're gonna continue to get dinged on the head with stuff, with articles like this that call you out. And it's something that it's just like this. When Katie was on a couple weeks ago, you know, you start at, we were talking about like that open mic scene, that weird open mic scene where it's just like people that say racist and sexist shit. I don't know. It's just like comedy is viewed as like one of the lowest art forms, but when it's done well and when you reach the heights, some people want to look at you and criticize you like you're a fucking politician. And you've heard people make these comparisons on social media and on other podcasts, but they look at you like that, and the part of what makes it an art form is dancing around those landmines and trying to make a joke work. Sometimes you fail, and then other times you succeed. And I think that's the high wire act that we do as comedians every time we step on stage. But if you want to do it the right way, it's like, I think you have to take into consideration how it's going to affect people. Like, if I say this, is it going to work this way? And it's the constant process of trying to make things work and trying to make it accessible to a general audience. And I think that's the fun. That's the fun in it, you know, to take those risks, but not at the expense to be malicious, because there's no art form in it. It's just like, there's no, I don't know, man. There's no fun in it. It's like people just want to go on stage and say nigger and faggot and Jews and, or whatever they want to say. I'm being like, you know, like to say that stuff, like they just want to say mean shit for the sake of saying it. And it's not right. I don't know, man. And it's just, it's clumsy, and it's just not funny. And I don't care about this. It's not about the punching down or punching up. It's just, this is about being funny, and it's not going to always work. But this racist shit, it's, there was somebody there. I have one text thread that, you know, that was saying like, oh, it's right for this show. I was like, oh, so they can treat you as a black writer like he did this other guy that we know about. And they're like, well, I mean, so-and-so and such. I was like, look, man, do what you want to do and get your money and Godspeed with whatever you do. Because it's not like you're never not going to work with somebody that's racist. So black people have always had to exist in the midst of that while trying to better ourselves and better our careers and better our, you know, do what we do in order to survive. But it was just funny, the people that were getting upset and complaining about this stuff. You know, if you're good at what you do, if you're doing it the right way, you shouldn't have a problem with a dude writing an article about racist people in your industry. I don't see what it is. I don't see where the problem lies. And if you want to be associated with these people, then I don't, if I had the choice of working with you, I would rather not work with you. Cause you just, this is something it's not like this shit just happened. It's just funny to me, man. Just it like when Gabe Pacheco was on last year, it's just like, write better jokes. Challenge yourself to get fun, get better, get good, get good. GITGUD, get good, get better at these jokes. That's all. If you want to get the love, get better at writing jokes and not just bitch about stuff on Twitter and complain about people that have more money than you or have more Patreon followers. Oh shit, man. Yeah, just get good. Maybe that's the title of this episode. Get good. Be better. Challenge yourself. I'm challenging myself all the time. I had some auditions this week. I challenged myself. I had an audition for a couple of them, but one in particular, which was for a recurring character on a new TV show that's written by people that I am aware of in the comedy community. I didn't start with them, but they seem to be very talented. They got a show coming out. And one good interesting thing about this audition was like, they're like, this audition and blah, blah, blah. And here's a link to the pilot presentation. It's like 15 minutes. Pilot presentation is kind of like the artist, the writers put together a project with the actors. They hire them and they put this presentation to show to like agencies and production companies and all that. So they get picked up. And so the presentation was there and I look at it, I was like, God damn, this is funny. This is good. And they had the character that they wanted me to play. And I'm looking that they wanted me to read for. And I look at it, I was like, okay, I can do that. I was like, that guy is young. I don't know how that works, but I will put my best foot forward and prepare an audition and submit. So that's what I did. And I submitted for it. And it was recurring. I was like, yo, this could be it. Not like this is my moment. It wasn't all that, but it was like, this is a good role. This seems like a fun show. And I do it, submit it. Then the next day, they're like, you know, they really liked you. They don't like you for this. The producers don't like you want you for this role, but they want you to read for something else. So I get this other part and it's, and I look at it. I was like, this is on the money. This is another, these guys can write, you know, this is a really good scene. And I think it's just for like, it might be, my manager was telling me it was originally for a recurring role. But it's just one scene and it's a really good scene. And I was kind of, I don't know, like this one was kind of like, I had anxiety about it. Just like, I got to get this. I got to nail this. It wasn't necessarily like, do I want the part? Obviously I want the part, but it was like, I gotta fucking get this. And I was like reading with my manager and then we got two really good takes. And so I submitted that. So we'll see what happens. But I think being in the pandemic now and actually going and putting myself on tape, doing these self-tape auditions, and I might have alluded to this before, but it was kind of like, yo, I really love this shit. This is what I love this. And I kind of felt like I was falling in love with acting again, like even more than I had been. Cause I dedicated a good 11, 12 years of my life to stand up and you kind of forget, but like being on set, like within the past 5 years was like really cool. And I think I did talk about really enjoying it and having to do stuff with more meat on the bones and getting considered for certain parts and stuff like that. And just being in the mix. Cause you know, it's like, I'm not getting these parts or whatever. And, but my, I remember my dad telling me, like, you know, he would say like 4 or 5 years ago, you weren't doing anything. He's like, so you're, you know, you are doing better. Like my dad's my, I think my dad's my biggest fan. He believes in me. But cause you get to look at yourself on tape and you can see like, I was like, oh, okay, I like that. Or I don't like this choice or I don't like that choice. And I can edit the thing and put it, you know, like put it together and I'm doing it myself. And then I can really see myself and I'm like, oh, okay, that, all right. That dude's pretty good. That's like when I would tape my comedy sets and play them back and just be like, oh, that was funny. Now, what else can I do with this? Or what else can I do with that joke or, you know, that inflection? And so that it's been fun to get to do this and work on this stuff. Cause I was talking to one friend and he was like, man, I don't even know if I want to do this shit anymore, like stand up or acting or anything. And I was like, I feel you, man. Like this stuff can take, it takes its toll on you. And it's not easy. Like people see the movie premiere. They see like the, you know, the great performances, but it takes a lot to get to that, man. It takes a lot. And so I just kind of just really been appreciating this stuff and yeah, just auditioning and putting myself out there. And yeah, I just been having fun with that. But what else? I think I've talked enough, but I want to give you, this is just going to be a robust Valentine's Day episode. I saw that Britney Spears doc on Hulu that everybody's been talking about. I look at Britney Spears and she's a year younger than me, so she's born in December 2nd, 1981, so she'll be 40 by the end of the year. And I just remember when she came out, I was a freshman in college. I was in high school she's a year younger than me. And when I saw her come out, I was like, oh, she's cute, hot, white girl, pretty, dancer and shit. And I just kind of like left it at that. But there are people that are obviously younger than me that were affected. You had that kid that was like, leave Britney alone, and the gay kid that they were making fun of. But that motherfucker had it right. He had it right all them years ago, apparently. And, it just speaks to that misogyny and the way that we treat women, and people are trying to go hard on Diane Sawyer and shit. Diane Sawyer should be, you know, like they're trying to cancel her or some shit. But you look at how fucked up that is, man. Like somebody asked her if she's a virgin. It's like, that's none of your fucking business, man. Just ask about the song. Like, oh, what you think? Like, how did you think come up with that song? And what was the process like? How do you feel about the tour? Or, but Nick, like, what the fuck? So, you know, that's another thing that we had to upgrade. And we look at how Justin Timberlake seemed to just skate off and like, you know, kind of talk his shit. And but it's been people that didn't like his ass for the longest time. Like they fucking hated him for the Janet Jackson stuff and for the Britney stuff. And he came out with an apology sometime yesterday and people were shitting on that. And he know what he did to them. And that was some bullshit. I think Justin Timberlake's talented. The homie, I didn't see what the homie Rod said that was really funny. I gotta find it. I think I just favorited that shit today. He said, every time people fry Justin Timberlake on Twitter, I end up with the bops from Future Sex Love sound stuck in my head. Y'all are the worst. That's true, man. Like, I like Future Sex Love sounds. And I think it is dope, but I feel like I like Justified a lot better. that was the Pharrell, the Neptunes, the joint that he did with the Neptunes, his first solo joint. And I was like, damn, this shit is fucking fire. And I did see him in concert. I saw him and Christina Aguilera, the Stripped Justified tour. It was good. He's got to reckon with that shit. And I don't know if he's true about it. I have no clue, but it's just a testament to us. Like, I talk about that recalibration, like society's like, yo, what we did to Britney Spears was fucked up. And the way that we treat these women in show business is fucked up. We need to change. So that was really fucking bad, man. I guess people got a lot of time on their hands. It's like they're like protesting. Something happened where I didn't want to get into all of this shit. Shit, hold on. I'd rather do the Hollywood Reporter. Prentice Penny, who is the showrunner for Insecure. Twitter users go wild as Insecure showrunner Prentice Penny reveals mother as judge in Britney Spears' conservatorship. And the conservatorship, which I'm kind of familiar with, where it's like if a person can't control what they're doing, like control. Oh shit. It's like, hold on. Where am I at? I want to get you the exact definition. Can't control their finances properly, then the court helps the, like, has like a fan. Okay, conservatorship is a legal concept in the United States. A guardian or protector is appointed by a judge to manage the financial affairs and or daily life of another due to physical or mental limitations or old age. A person under conservatorship is a conservatee, a term that can refer to an adult. So that's, I think her dad has been that conservator for Britney for quite some time. And that's why we have the whole hullabaloo. I could have told Britney's dad she don't play. He tweeted in identifying his mom, Brenda Penny, as the woman presiding over the latest hearing. Let me see. Following the release of the New York Times documentary framing Britney Spears, the pop icon's longstanding conservatorship has been in the headlines. An unexpected twist following a Thursday status hearing sent Twitter users into a frenzy. The judge handling the case is Insecure showrunner Prentice Penny's mother. On Thursday afternoon, L.A. Court Superior Court Judge Brenda Penny ruled that the wealth management and investment advisory firm Bessemer Trust will continue to act as co-conservator of Britney Spears' estate alongside her father, Jamie Spears. The decision is consistent with her earlier ruling in November, but was still widely celebrated by fans because the judge overruled objections from Jamie over the division of power when it comes to his daughter's financial investments. News of the hearing spread fast and wide on Twitter among the Free Britney movement, a collective of devoted followers that have been closely monitoring every development in the conservatorship for years. But one thing that had gone unnoticed even by them until now was the judge's Hollywood connection. One fan account featured framing Britney Spears at Britney Hiatus on Twitter responded to the Thursday hearing with a tweet that said, Judge Penny has sided with Britney, overruling her father's objections, and will sign the order giving Bessemer Trust equal power, #FreeBritney. A little more than an hour later, Prentice Penny weighed in by responding to that tweet with a reveal of his own. Also, Judge Penny is my actual mother. I could have told Britney's dad she don't play. So it looks like her dad doesn't have full control, and people are happy about that. So, and then they show tweets of his mom getting sworn in and all that stuff. According to her legal profile, Judge Penny has been in her current post with Superior Court since October 2018, educated at the University of West Los Angeles School of Law and the University of Southern California. She previously held positions in the same court as commissioner and assistant supervising probate attorney. During an appearance on Sam Sanders' NPR podcast, It's Been a Minute, Prentice opened up about his mother, saying she decided to go to law school after splitting with his father. "I was raised by some strong black women," he said, praising his mother and grandmothers. Yeah, cool. So at least dad doesn't have control over all the money. But yeah, it's just fucked up the way people treat these starlets and all that shit, man. It's a fucked up business, but beautiful at the same time. It's hard to get to that beauty especially when, you know, human beings are involved with insidious ulterior motives. How about that? So that's an interesting case study, you know, about how, you know, we treat celebrities, and then people who've like talk shit about people and then they just manage to be like, "Oh my God, it's so bad the way we treated her," but even though they were a part of that bullshit, you know. Okay, I want to talk about some music and then get to a couple of movies. So black people were talking about Malcolm and Marie last week, and white people were talking about Phoebe Bridgers' performance on SNL where she smashed a guitar. She really didn't smash it. It just seemed like she broke it. I don't think she went all the way with it, but I looked up, I said, you know what? People are talking about, what the hell is that? That sounds like a motorcycle or a blender. I don't know what that is. I don't know, guys. I'm just gonna keep. Wow. That's really weird, but I'm gonna just try to plow through this. So people were talking about Phoebe Bridgers, and I was like, let me check her out. Like, at one point I was going to try to get listen to her stuff, but I just didn't get to it. The Punisher album. And so on my way to work on Thursday, I go to work really early. I get up early and it was like dark outside, and I listened to her first album, Stranger in the Alps, which came out in 2017. And I was like, oh, I dig this. You know, this is really good. She kind of puts me in the mind of Jenny Lewis in a lot of ways. Like, not sonically, but like, she's a white woman with the guitar. God, Jesus Christ, I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's my shitty downstairs neighbors trying to fuck up my podcast. Because I tried to start early, so like, we couldn't at least hear their music. But it's just so fucking weird. I don't know what that is. I don't know. Seems like it stopped now. Sorry for this. I'll try to take the air out of that. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. Maybe you'll just get the podcast like this, raw and uncut. Anyway, so I was driving to work. I said, let me just not listen to a podcast. Let me do something that's a little bit on the edge and listen to this Phoebe Bridgers album. And I really dig it. Like, she kind of just the songwriting really reminds me of Jenny Lewis, where like Jenny Lewis is just like, she says what she says. Yeah, you know, there could be like this flowery language at times, but it's just really like kind of just straightforward and to the point. Like, she's saying what she means. There was this one record called Funeral. I think it's on this first album, it's track 3, and it's just like she's talking about like having to sing at a friend's funeral that's just like maybe I think a year older than her or something, and she's talking to her dad. It just kind of reminds me of like oh God, this record that Rilo Kiley did. Let me see. I think that's somebody blowing snow. Sorry, this is what happens when, hey guys, I'm sorry I don't have a studio like Joe Rogan or Tim Dillon. I'm sorry that I'm not fucking famous like those guys, and I don't have make all this money for my fucking podcast. You're just gonna have to fucking deal with it. All right, this record, this record from More Adventurous, which came out in 2004. And it's a, let me see, what the fuck is the name of that record? I think it's called A Man / Me / Then Jim. And listen to Funeral and then listen to that song. Let me know what you think. But yeah, just that kind of just, and I just kind of thought of that. But definitely like that Jenny Lewis, where she's just like this open, she's very open in her songwriting. And that's what I like about Phoebe Bridgers. Yeah, I like her shit, but her music is very like folky and, pastoral, like a kind of sounds like a Fleet Foxes and I don't know, like, yeah, just it, you know, it's good. Like I'm into that acoustic stuff. So I like her. And I did like The Punisher. And so I listened to those albums and then I watched her set on SNL. Cause I didn't watch her set as I watched the show. I just like to watch the sketches. Sometimes I fast forward over the musical acts, but when it caused such a hullabaloo, I was like, let me watch it. And she's doing a song and it seemed like it's like, okay, her live performance, she rocks out a little bit with her band. But she doesn't strike me as the rock star. But if she wanted to break her guitar, she's on SNL. That's a moment. And boom, it worked. It got me to listen to her shit. So I dig her stuff, man. I would see her live. I would go see her live. Pretty white girl that can sing and play the guitar. I mean. What more do you want? And but it's almost like, why are you so sad, white girl? You pretty white girl. Why are you so sad? Jesus Christ. You know what it is? Like they're trying to get rid of all that snow. Like there's like a lot of snow that accumulated. We got some. I had to clean off my car on Thursday before I went to work. So it goes. That's nature. So that was good. I liked, I'm a new fan of Phoebe Bridgers. I'm going to start to listen to more of her stuff and watch some live performances on YouTube. I started watching this performance that she did on KEXP. I always like looking at, they do interviews and the artists do like a live set in studio. So it's pretty cool. So that's that. That's one recommendation. I do recommend that you listen to Phoebe Bridgers if you're into her sort of thing. I'm into it. Pharoah Monch, he put out this album, and he's he formed this rock group with Daru Jones and Marcus Machado, and they're called 13. But instead of the I in 13 is a 1, and the one of the E's in 13 is a 3. But whatever it is, they put out an album called A Magnificent Day for an Exorcism, and it's really good. I had listened to Pharoah Monch on Questlove Supreme, and I was like, oh shit, that's right, he's got an album out. And that shit goes. Like I finished the last leg of my TPS reports. I think that was on Wednesday. Yeah, and just was listening to it. I was like, God damn, this rocks. This is good. It's like rock. It's kind of like a rap rock type thing. And Pharoah Monch is arguably one of the greatest. And he's like your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. It's good. It's really good. Fucking Pitchfork was trying to give it a fucking 6. Cause I was trying to figure out the why, you know, the people who make up this whole band or whatever. And I looked at a review and it was like a fucking, I don't even remember what, let me look at what that fucking review is. I can't stand this shit. 5.9, get the fuck out of here, bitch ass. And then like hopefully 30, 40 years from now, if he passes away, motherfuckers like this, I'll be like, oh, he was so good. Like, fuck you. Fuck anybody that's like super talented that they give these bullshit reviews to. It's good, man. I like it. It goes. It's just, it made me want to listen. It made me go back and listen to some other Pharoahe shit. He's just one of those dudes that like you kind of forget about. It's not like it's not being dismissive or anything. He's so good that like his shit can get really dense and you really have to be invested when you're listening. But like I said, you know, I try to give you music like recommendations whenever I can, but like I'm a guy in my old age that really really enjoys listening to podcasts to pass the time. So but I think now and I'm at a point where, see, here go my fucking neighbor's playing loud music now, but it's like we're almost wrapping up. Wow, they suck, man. Okay, I'm powering through. But it's giving me, like, you know, I'm not commuting like I used to, like, you know, and so I want to listen to more music. So I've just been kind of, not necessarily forcing myself to listen to music, but it's just like I try to pay more attention and try to listen to stuff. But Pharoahe Monch is, like, fucking fantastic. Every time I come back or revisit his stuff, it's just, it's really good. He's one of the greats. What else? So he's great. I like that. A Magnificent Day for an Exorcism. I highly recommend it. It's good. It rocks out. I tried to send it to my buddies in a text thread. Nothing. They didn't say shit. They don't fucking understand, man. They don't fucking get it, bro. Talked about the Phoebe Bridgers. Rapper Big Pooh put out a project with Young RJ, who I believe is a producer. It's called What Was Lost Volume 1. It's like a 5-song EP. It's good. The first song, let me see what this first record is. I really like it. Let me see what this first record is. It's called The Recipe. It's really good. It goes hard. It goes fucking hard, dude. Fucking take my advice. Really like that. Carmen Rogers, who is a part of the Foreign Exchange Crew, she released an EP called Hello Human. I think that's about 6 songs. It's out now wherever you stream, buy and download music. It's fucking good. I loved it. Great voice. Super talented. What else? Let me see if there's some more. There's some more tunage. This guy named Giveon, who had recently, I think this past week, had a Tiny Desk concert that was really good. Shout out to Yoli on Twitter who was talking about it. I was like, yeah, I've heard of this dude. And I watched his Tiny Desk and I was like, okay, this dude sounds, he's like 25, 26. And I was like, okay, this guy kind of puts me in the mind of kind of like a Jesse Boykins and meets Will Downing a little bit. Very jazzy. Good shit. I like it. I dig it. I want to get into more of his stuff. So that's music that I've listened to. Let's close this out. Finally got to see Minari. I saw Minari last night. They finally, like, I've been trying to see this movie for months. It's been on the virtual film festival circuit, and every time I would try to get a ticket, it would be like sold out within minutes. And so I've been really pressed to see it. And A24, I got this email from the Montclair Film Festival. They're like, oh, you can see Minari. It's coming out. I immediately logged, like, went to the website. A24 was doing the screenings. I got a ticket and I was good. And so I did Rod and Karen's Nerd Off. Had a blast doing that. And as soon as I logged off, I made myself a quick dinner and watched Minari, and I really liked it. It was definitely, my anticipation to see it was really high. And then when I saw it, it's just like this really good family drama. So I'll read you the Google blurb. A Korean family moves to Arkansas A Korean American family moves to an Arkansas farm in search of its own American dream. Amidst the challenges of this new life and strain in the strange and rugged Ozarks, they discover the undeniable resilience of family and what makes a home. And this is written and directed by Lee Isaac Chung, and it stars Steven Yeun of The Walking Dead fame. Really good. I enjoyed it. I gave it 3.5 stars on Letterboxd. Good ass movie. And it's playing in theaters now. Don't go to the theater. And it's like $20 for a ticket. I think they're doing a run, and then it's eventually gonna go on demand or streaming somewhere. But if you're a nerd like me and you're really into this stuff, I would highly recommend. Okay, last thing. Judas and the Motherfucking Black Messiah. Holy shit. So Friday morning, I woke up early. I woke up early to seeing a text about the Dave Chappelle special coming out, that it was out. And I was like, okay, let me watch that. And I said, okay, now I can't sleep. And I'm going to be up all fucking day. And I said to myself, you know what? I might as well watch Judas and the Black Messiah before any of this criticism comes out, for any of this bullshit that comes out, and just have my experience with it the way that I want to have it. And so it goes. So I turned this fucking thing on from moment one, wire to wire, just a masterpiece. It's an instant classic. I was moved to tears by watching one of Daniel Kaluuya's speech. It's incredible. I don't know how they're gonna, like, the Golden Globes gave him a Best Supporting Actor nomination, but I mean, you know, when you have two male roles that are the lead roles, I feel like you could give them both. They're both lead actors, Lakeith Stanfield and Kaluuya. So I don't know how they're going to do this, but I think Daniel Kaluuya should get a Best Actor nomination for the Academy Awards. This motherfucker, holy shit, he had the fucking accent down, and he had, you know, this, I mean, this movie from top to bottom, every actor on here killed this shit. I tweeted this, folks. It's an instant classic. This is gonna be this generation's like Malcolm X. But it's hard to say that, but I fucking just said it. But it's not as like epic, but it was just like a particular time frame. A biopic that just focused on this particular time frame, and it was just so in the pocket. It's like a, one critic said that this was kind of like the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. I believe that's it. The assassination of Jesse James. Oh yeah, I was right. The assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. And I think he's right to a certain degree. That movie was 2 hours and 40 minutes. But let me read you the blurb on this. Yeah, see, I think, yeah, these guys suck. My neighbors suck. Let's see. I'll read you the blurb here for Judas and the Black Messiah. Offered a plea deal by the FBI, William O'Neill infiltrates the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party to gather intelligence on Chairman Fred Hampton. And these, literally, these guys, they were kids. I think O'Neal was about 17 when he infiltrated. I don't know, like, I'm not going to act like I am a scholar on Fred Hampton. I just knew, like, being in Chicago and hearing Common rap about him a lot and people talking about him, like, he was a Black Panther and he was, you know, about bettering the people and really trying to bring people together. And when people like that, Patrice O'Neal had a joke about that. He didn't directly mention Fred Hampton, but it was like anybody that tried to unite people, they got rid of them. They assassin, and it's the ending's obviously fucking horrible and sad. You know, Fred Hampton was, you know, murdered in his own home, and the circumstances and the way that it happened, I knew that, but I didn't know like the details that this film goes into. One thing I'm going to push back on the critics when they said, I was listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour, my homie Aisha Harris, they were saying that the FBI was they were too villainy. I was like, well, I mean, that's kind of, they killed the guy. And that's kind of what they were to a certain degree. Like, they were just, like, I don't know how much nuance you could have when it comes to that. When you know, just like, and I think they're more privy because they've probably done way more research than I did, I'm sure. But it just puts me in the mind. When they said that, I was thinking about the Reuben Hurricane Carter movie that Denzel did, and how, like, one of the, I think the, it wasn't Harvey, was it Harvey Keitel that was the big bad in that? Like, he represented a number of people, of the police that were, like, shitty. It wasn't Liev Schreiber. Who was it? It was a bad cop. I'm looking this up, and then we'll wrap this up, and I'll let you get on with your lives here. I was trying to figure out who. I think it was Dan Hedaya, I think, was like one of the bad cops, I want to say. But anyway, it's a fantastic movie, and just one of these speeches, man. You know, like, the people are saying that Dominique Fishback was a revelation, and not to me, because if you listen to this podcast and you watch this movie called Night Comes On that came out in 2018, it's on Netflix. So if you like Dominique Fishback in this and you're like, oh my God, who's this girl? She's amazing. And there's a point that she was not the typical I'm the girlfriend of the activist. It was just like, I love the way that they did that, the way that they showed that relationship. She played his partner, Deborah Johnson. And but if you're really into Dominique Fishback, I would recommend Night Comes On. And it says that it's on Netflix, so you should watch that and then be like, yo, this girl is the truth. And I like to say that I talked about it on the podcast before, but I was really moved by this. This is that Black people homework. You know, I got on Leonard Brothers. Shout out to Leonard Brothers. He was tweeting like, oh, I tweeted about it. It's like, oh my God, this is a masterpiece, this is whatever I said. And then he was like, I think I might try to check that out this week. I was like, you might check it out this weekend. Like, you better check that shit out. And he's like, all right, Chris. All right. But yeah, it's fantastic. It's, I don't know, man. I got to say, you know, I tweeted this earlier. Like, I ain't seen much better than Daniel Kaluuya and Riz Ahmed in the male acting category. Now, Chadwick killed in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and I think he might. You know, I would not be surprised if he got nominated for that. They're saying he could get it for the Five Bloods, but I don't like saying duh. I'm gonna say the Five Bloods. It just sounds so authentic, duff, when I say it. It just sounds weird. But like Five Bloods, he was good in it, but like if you're gonna take away from him getting nominated, you take some shine away from Ma Rainey, that portrayal as Levy. I would rather him just get the nom for Ma Rainey. But those three performances, you know, fantastic. Judas and the Black Messiah on HBO Max. I can't recommend it enough. So, all right, guys, that's been me for the week. I hope you got something out of this. I hope you enjoyed it. Let's try to be better. Let's try to not hate on people as much as we do. Let's try not to, you know, be jealous. Let's try to get good, young. Get good, young. And I'll talk to you next week. Take it easy, everybody.